News. I'm Liz Pelka. The U.S. House of Representatives is set to vote Tuesday on authorizing lawsuits against Attorney General William Barr and former White House counsel Don McGahn. The lawsuits are over their refusal to cooperate with congressional subpoenas in connection with the Russian election interference investigation. Lawmakers want access to documents from Special Counsel Mueller's report on whether President Donald Trump obstructed justice by trying to thwart the investigation. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo praised President Trump's deal with Mexico to avert tariffs that was announced last week. He called it a win for the American people from the State Department on Monday. The comments come as the Trump administration faces questions about just how much of the deal is actually new. Here, Pompeo responds to a question about what's different from a previous deal discussed late last year.
The scale, the effort, the commitment here is very different from what we were able to achieve back in December, and frankly wouldn't have happened. The entire team from the Mexican government that came up, they came up because the president had raised the specter of 5% tariffs on their products. It's what prompted this series of conversations that took on a level of seriousness and a timed commitment that we were committed to getting done before the weekend.
The agreement includes a commitment from Mexico to deploy its new National Guard to the country's southern border with Guatemala. The Russian Interior Minister says investigative journalist Ivan Kolonov has been freed from house arrest, and authorities are now conducting an internal probe into his detention. In a statement Tuesday, the Interior Minister said the police officers involved in detaining the journalist have been suspended. You can read more on this story on VOAnews.com. This is VOA News. President Trump is threatening to impose tariffs on another $325 billion worth of imported goods from China. Trump says that's if President Xi Jinping does not engage in new trade talks with him later this month. Trump said he expects to meet with Xi in Osaka, Japan at the G20 meeting of the leaders of the world's largest economies.
I think President Xi of China, great relationship with him. I think he'll be there. We are scheduled to talk and to meet. I think interesting things will happen. Let's see what happens.
Trump said he would impose the new tariffs on top of tariffs he already has levied if she skips the meeting. The International Labor Conference in Geneva, Switzerland, is looking at the profound transformational changes taking place in the world of work. Dozens of heads of state are among those weighing in on this issue, including South Africa's president, Cyril Ramaphosa. He says the threats to work posed by technological advances, the growth of artificial intelligence, automation, and robotics require a human-centered response.
As countries of Africa, we are particularly determined to ensure that this investment focuses on the creation of economic opportunities for young people. Many of the young people on our continent are unemployed and lack the critical skills demanded by the workplace of both the present and the future.
Ramaphosa has been looking into the problem as co-chair of the Global Commission on the Future of Work. Boston Red Sox baseball legend David Ortiz is hospitalized after being shot in his native Dominican Republic. Ortiz was relocated to a hospital in Boston on Monday. AP correspondent Rita Foley reports on the outpouring of affection from fans.
So many fans crowded around the Boston hospital that it caused a traffic jam. Supporters wished David Ortiz well and prayed for him.
Through all these years, we've grown up watching him. He's just been there. We've been with him through the ups and downs. He's been there for us.
He's done a lot for the community. He's done a lot for the kids. He's done a lot for everybody, especially breaking the curse in 04. I mean, that's one of the biggest things he's ever done for us in Boston.
That's when David Ortiz helped Boston win the World Series. He led the Red Sox to 3 World Series championships in all, one of the most beloved figures in all of sports. I'm Rita Foley.
Ortiz is lovingly known as Big Poppy to his fans. The Federal Aviation Administration said the National Transportation Safety Board is investigating a helicopter crash atop of a New York City skyscraper on Monday. The helicopter crash landed on the roof of the high-rise, killing the pilot and starting a fire, according to officials. I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
We'll be right back. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
But last August, her prayers were answered. Then she says the Red Cross called her, informing her that her siblings have been found.
That's Eugene Uimana reporting from Kigali. Details coming up. Also, Botswana becomes the fourth African country to decriminalize homosexual relations. And Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for African Affairs warns Sudan that it needs to transition to a civilian-led government if it wants to improve relations with the United States. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Botswana's High Court has overturned colonial-era laws that made gay sex illegal and punishable, up to 7 years in prison. Botswana is only the fourth African country to decriminalize homosexual relations and the first to do so through the courts. Makondisi Kudube reports from Botswana's capital, Gaborone.
Gay rights activists shout with joy after Botswana's High Court justice on Tuesday ruled to decriminalize same-sex relations in Botswana. Addressing the court, Judge Justice Michael Liburu said there was need for Botswana to embrace diversity and promote tolerance. 24-year-old university student Lutsoletsi Muchidema had challenged two of the Southern African country's colonial-era laws. The laws, though rarely enforced, made gay sex punishable by up to 7 years in prison. Muchidema's lawyer, Tiamo Rantau, hailed the judgment.
There shall be no sexual discrimination based on sexual orientation from now henceforth. Parliament of Botswana did exactly that when it prohibited discrimination in the employment arena on the basis of sexual orientation. It is a very progressive decision. I'm sure it will be celebrated all over the world.
Lesbians, gays and bisexuals of Botswana, Lekka people, spokesperson Kane Youngman said the ruling was a win for equal rights.
It basically just puts us at par with the rest of the community. It was not about asking for any extra special rights, no. It was about just asking for us to be equal to other Botswana, period.
The case removed Section 164 and 165 of Botswana's Penal Code, which was similar to anti-gay laws in other former British colonies. Kenya's High Court in May upheld its colonial-era laws against gay sex, dealing a blow to activists' hopes it would lead the expansion of gay rights in Africa. Botswana gay rights activist Katleho Kolenyane Kusipile, who underwent gender transformation, said the ruling was a victory for everyone.
I'm really happy that Botswana has added to its record of upholding human rights provisions for each and every single citizen. So for those who might think that this is a victory only for LGBTQ+ people, we really are here to say that every single member of the community of Botswana, the population of Botswana, deserves to be protected under the laws of the country.
Homosexuality is a crime in the majority of African nations and discrimination is common. Botswana joins Angola, Mozambique and the Seychelles in removing anti-gay laws and is the first to do so through the court system. The others removed the discriminatory laws through parliament and constitutional reform. While the Botswana High Court's ruling is widely seen as a victory for gay rights, South Africa remains the only country on the continent with explicit legal rights based on sexual orientation. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News in Gaborone.
Microsoft today launched its first Africa Development Center, ADC, with two initial sites in Nairobi, Kenya, and Lagos, Nigeria. The ADCs are intended to serve as a premier center of engineering for Microsoft, where world-class African talents can create solutions for local and global impact. To brief us on the matter, I talked to VOA's Salem Salomon. Welcome to Africa News Tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So, Salem, to start out our conversation, explain to our listeners what this new investment by Microsoft in Africa is all about.
Well, the new investment by Microsoft is launching what it calls the African Development Center. Its initial hubs are located in Lagos, Nigeria, and Nairobi in Kenya. So the company plans to invest $100 million in the project, and they're planning to hire 500 engineers within 5 years. So this follows an announcement in March by Microsoft that it was opening two data centers in South Africa, rivaling Amazon and other tech companies. I recently interviewed Amrote Abdallah, who happens to be originally from Ethiopia. She's the regional director of Microsoft's For Africa initiative, spelled as number four and then Africa with a K. So I asked her about this investment, and she said that this is really a reinforcement and commitment from the company that they are in Africa for the long haul, and they're here to stay.
So we have mentioned the sites, Nigeria and Kenya, and their respective capitals. So what will go on in Lagos, and what is planned for Nairobi?
Well, in Nairobi, engineers will work to ensure that in Windows and other Microsoft products work with millions of devices in use by African customers. So Microsoft stressed that it wants people with local knowledge who can examine exactly how people on the continent are using its products, like Microsoft Office and others. In Lagos, it's more advanced, and the tech industry is burgeoning there. So a team will focus on what they call mixed reality services. So what mixed reality services, including headsets and other devices, that will allow users to experience simulated scenarios and environments. So tools useful in training doctors, mechanics, and other professionals. So Microsoft is also planning to work with local universities to develop a curricula to prepare students for high-tech jobs focused on artificial intelligence, mixed reality, and other emerging trends.
So, Salem, what does this mean in terms of the bigger picture for the tech sector in Africa?
So this is big. I mean, this is part of a growing trend. And you saw Google recently is working on artificial intelligence lab in Ghana. Meanwhile, you see Huawei, a Chinese tech giant, recently renewed and expanded a three-year memorandum of understanding with the African Union, despite tensions. Tensions between China and the U.S. could push African nations into choices over whom they partner with. So they'll have more opportunities and choices. And so what this means for Microsoft, it means that the company is seeing enormous potential in the African tech sector. It also means that software developers and other highly skilled professionals on the continent will have more opportunities in Africa. They're hopeful that the so-called, you know, the brain drain could be reversed. And so what Amrote said when I was talking to her about this is that if you are a great software engineer and you don't have to leave the continent to have a good career, it is a game changer in that way, that you don't have to go somewhere else looking for opportunities.
A brighter era dawning in Africa for the tech sector. VOA Salem Salomon, thank you for your input.
Thanks for having me.
Tibor Naz, the Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for African Affairs, plans to meet both members of the military leadership and protest leaders in Khartoum this week. The State Department says he will call for a cessation of attacks against civilians and urge parties to work toward resuming talks. Sudan's army last week attacked thousands of demonstrators who had been gathered for months near army headquarters. The crackdown came after weeks of stalemate in the talks with the protesters, who are demanding a swift transition to civilian rule. Dozens were killed in the attack. Naz denounced the crackdown as brutal and warned Sudan that it needed to transition to a civilian-led government if it wants to improve relations with the United States. However, three Arab allies of the United States, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and the UAE, backed the Sudanese Military Council. Marina Ottaway, a senior scholar at the Woodrow Wilson Institute, spoke to VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about that support.
They are afraid that any movement towards democracy in any Arab country will incite people inside their own citizens have no intention of allowing more democratic participation.
Why Egypt, while presiding over the African Union, did not mediate between the military council in Sudan and the protesters instead of Ethiopian Prime Minister?
Well, because I don't think mediating with protesters is part of what the Egyptian president does at this point. At home, he replies to protest by repression and not by dialogue. So it's not surprising that he should not be trying to mediate in another country.
So if the U.S. is calling repeatedly for a transition to a civilian rule in Sudan, how do you explain that three U.S. major allies are acting against what the United States wants?
Well, because first of all, the United States is not really committed to Sudan. This is not an issue to which the United States gives great importance. Africa comes very low in the list of priorities. Democracy promotion comes very low in the list of priorities for the Trump administration, so that the support for a civilian government, it's rhetoric. It's the kind of the boilerplate response that the United States always gives. So there is really no penalty to allies of the United States to make statements that go against the policy of the United States in this case.
But does the United States have a solid strategy on Sudan beyond just condemning the military crackdown against protesters?
No, I think it has absolutely no strategy. And I don't think it's even trying to develop a strategy. As I said before, keep in mind that African countries have a very low priority for the Trump administration. So I think the idea that the United States is going to do something to support the protesters in the Sudan, it's preposterous. De facto, there has been no support given to the protest. I mean, the United States made a lot of statements, but in practice, they have abandoned the protesters to their own fate, so that there is no reason to expect that the United States intends to do anything in the Sudan.
That was Marina Ottaway with the Woodward Wilson Institute in Washington, speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. In Khartoum today, a civil disobedience general strike has entered a third day and the city streets are quiet. Residents and journalists there report that security forces continue to hold positions and patrol the city. In addition, protesters have erected barricades on roads in some neighborhoods. The Red Cross in Rwanda has launched a campaign on identifying and connecting lost children with their families. It says there are more than 1,000 lost children looking for their parents. Eugene Uimana has more details from Kigali.
Mwawenimana Yvette is a 30-year-old Burundian who recently found her family after 24 years. Now a mother of three children, she explains how hard it was to find her family members, though they were living in the same city of Kigali. She says people used to laugh at her when she was searching for her parents. They couldn't understand how she had not been discouraged after all those years. But last August, her prayers were answered. Then she says the Red Cross called her, informing her that her siblings have been found. When she met them, they told her that her parents are dead. The Red Cross in Rwanda says that there are over 1,000 similar cases in the country, 800 children from Burundi and 200 from the Democratic Republic of Congo. Felix Kalekezi works for Red Cross Rwanda and is in charge of the effort to reunite families. He says they are telling children and the parents not to lose hope. However odd the case may be, it is not impossible to find their beloved ones, because once they receive a request, they always work on it unceasingly. Since the 1994 genocide perpetrated against the Tutsi, the Red Cross has identified 20,000 Ugandan children who were separated from their parents at the time. They have all been reunited. Now the focus is on Burundians and the Congolese who have lost their families when they were dispersed to different camps and forests while fleeing wars and violence. Kalechezi says they now have a reliable method to locate lost families. He says the first step is for Red Cross workers to visit them in the camps and register their cases with their photos. They make announcements on radios and the TV. For the ones who might not be in Rwanda, we have electronic messages that we send to their countries of origin. That message goes with the photos and the family information too. He says they are now hopeful that this campaign will have good results. Rwanda hosts hundreds of Burundian refugees who fled their country during a 2015 political crisis when President Pierre Nkurunziza said he was seeking a third term. People fled to Rwanda, the DRC, Tanzania, and Uganda. The Red Cross thinks many of the lost parents of the Burundian children in Rwanda may live in those countries. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Kigali, Rwanda.
You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Twenty-two past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Botswana becomes the fourth African country to decriminalize homosexual relations and the first to do so through the courts. Assistant U.S. Secretary of State for African Affairs warns Sudan that it needs to transition to a civilian-led government if it wants to improve relations with the United States. And Microsoft today launched its first African Development Center with two initial sites in Nairobi and Lagos. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Democratic Republic of Congo today declared a measles epidemic is underway in the country, which also is battling an Ebola outbreak in the eastern provinces. In Kinshasa, the health ministry said there have been at least 87,000 reported cases. As many as 1,500 measles patients have died. The ministry says the measles virus is spreading in 23 of the country's 26 provinces. It is pushing ahead with a new vaccination program. In April, more than 2 million children were vaccinated. The Zimbabwe government says it has secured a strategic partner for the state-owned company responsible for procuring, processing, and marketing beef, lamb, goat, and related products. But as Adigando reports from Bulawayo, the deal has raised some concerns.
The Cold Storage Commission was formed in 1938 to develop Zimbabwe's beef industry and to promote the economic interests of white beef producers. By 1987, the state-controlled CSC employed nearly 5,000 employees, earning about $32 million a year. At its height, it processed 150,000 tons of beef, helping make Zimbabwe a leading exporter of beef in Africa. Since 2000, however, the CASC has struggled with a shortage of funding and a heavy load of foreign debt. An outbreak of hoof and mouth disease ended its exports in 2007. The Minister of Finance says the company now has a new strategic partner, a British company called Boosted Beef, which promises to inject US$130 million into the joint venture over 5 years. The agreement, however, comes with some controversy. Reginald Shoko is an economic analyst who is critical of the deal with the foreign company.
One thing that we have to notice and say is in our appetite for foreign direct investment, we need not to forget the local entrepreneurs. $130 million is a bit of a lot of money in terms of figures, but I think local entrepreneurs could have raised that money. So we should have considered offering them a local, especially an asset of that nature.
However, others note that one of Boosted Beef's managing director is a Zimbabwean, Nick Havercroft. The government says Boosted will take over CSC's debts of US$42 million and pay US$100,000 a year in rent for the first 5 years. Dumisani Sbanda, an economic analyst, says Boosted's assumption of CSC's debt is unusual.
Yeah, that's why that is very abnormal. To me, that's not normal. Because what normally invest, because $2 million is a lot of money. It's a lot of money. There's no one who would want to move in and absorb $42 million. Because that is not a very easy market. The beef market is not an easy market.
Boosted Beef will manage 7 CSC cattle ranches for an initial period of 25 years, aiming to return to the international beef market. However, the deal has raised questions. There are news reports questioning Boosted Beef's ability to make good on its plans, because some corporate records in Britain made it appear as though it had little funding or expertise in agriculture. Managing Director Nick Havercroft rejects those concerns. In a series of texts, he points to his own track record of creating a successful tobacco production company in Zimbabwe, a green energy company in Africa, and 2 biotechnology companies, one in Britain and one in the United States. He says that Boosted Beef is an arm of a company that dates back nearly 200 years in Asia and Britain and has funding from a variety of investors. Even with the concerns about bypassing local investors, several business analysts say they welcome Boosted's investment into CSC. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo in Bulawayo.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the CEOs of Kenya and South African Airways have announced their resignations. Does this signal a lack of progress for African airlines? Africa's airline woes on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa.